As I said earlier, we're starting this new series on the parables of Jesus Christ. So today we're going to be looking at Matthew 13, mainly verses 10 to 17, but there will be various parts of Matthew 13. We'll be plucking out the odd verse here or there from as well. But Matthew 13, verses 10 to 17, really trying to answer the question, why does Jesus speak in parables? It's the question the disciples ask in verse 10. That's exactly what they say. They come to him and ask, why do you speak to them in parables? Now, there was a time in my life that was not too long ago when I used to know the CBeebies schedule on TV pretty well. I used to know how it ended in the evening, it finished at 7 o'clock. I think it's still the same, I don't think it's changed, it wasn't that long ago. You'd have In the Night Garden, and then the last thing they'd have would be the bedtime story. And every day it's read by a different celebrity. And when you stop and think about it, it was quite surprising that they would do that. That with this digital age, all sort of modern technology, amazing things, cartoons, all stuff you can do, they actually just have somebody sitting down with a book, turning the pages, showing them the pictures in the book. You know, it's such a sort of a simple thing. You'd think, haven't you got anything more exciting to do? But children watch it because children love stories. They hear a story every night if they watch it on CBeebies. I don't know about you, but I can remember stories I was read as a child. I can imagine the pictures of some of my favourite stories, and I suspect many of you can too. I suspect many of you can remember word for word some stories you were read, because you have read them so many times as a child. We love stories. We love stories with twists and turns. We love pictures. You know, a brilliantly illustrated children's book, it's just great, isn't it? We love those sorts of stories. In the parables of Jesus, you have stories that have drawn people in and captivated their minds for about 2,000 years. Jesus is a great storyteller. Now, there's more going on here than that, but he is a great storyteller. As we read some of these parables, we're going to see that over the coming weeks. But let's start with the most basic question of all. What is a parable? What actually is a parable? See, I just started talking a moment about stories. Does parable mean the same thing as story? Well, there's more to it than that. You may have heard, if you've been to church plenty of times before and you've heard people talking about parables, you may have heard the definition that a parable is an earthly story with a heavenly meaning. Have you heard that definition before? Yeah, a fair number of you have. Okay, well, it's not dreadful, but it's not actually a very good definition. Because it's an earthly story, but actually some of them are about heavenly things, heaven and hell. And yeah, parables can be stories, but they can be lots of other things as well as stories. I'll explain why in a minute. And a heavenly meaning probably isn't the clearest word to use either, because what do you mean by heavenly? I think it would be better perhaps to say a spiritual meaning, some sort of story with a spiritual meaning. Now, the word parable, what does the word parable actually mean then? Well, in the Old and New Testament, the word itself has a very broad range of meanings. It can mean a story, but it can be almost an anecdote. It can be a poem. It can be a proverb, or a riddle, or some sort of short story. To give you just one example, this is Luke chapter 4, verse 23. Jesus says, "You will surely say this proverb to me, 'Physician, heal yourself.'" Well, when he's talking about proverb there, he's talking about a parable. It's the same thing, the same word. So, "physician, heal yourself" is a parable too. Do you see what I mean? We think of parables as being these proper stories. They're more than that. That's the reason why it's actually very hard to pin down exactly how many parables there are in the Bible. If you ask anyone, they'll come up with a different number, because it depends exactly what you count as a parable. But there's probably somewhere between 40, 50, maybe 60 parables. Well, I told you that that other definition wasn't very good. You want a better one. This is John MacArthur. John MacArthur says, a parable is an ingeniously simple word picture illuminating a profound spiritual lesson. So it's a picture in put into words that has a spiritual lesson. Okay, next question. That's what a parable actually is. Next question. Why did Jesus teach in parables? Now again, this is one of these questions where we might think we know the answer. Well, wasn't it to help people understand? I mean, stories are great for illustrating things, aren't they? Examples bring things to life. Teachers will always be doing this, won't they? They'll be showing examples, they'll be finding different ways of explaining things. Isn't that what Jesus is doing here? Well, there is an element of truth in that, but there's a lot more to it. Because when Jesus was asked this question, he gave quite a different answer. Well, first, before we actually answer that question, we need to take note of another thing as well. So that Jesus didn't only teach in parables. In fact, even if you just flick through the book of Matthew, you'll find, for example, the Sermon on the Mount, chapters 5 to 7. And there's very little, if any, parabolic material in there at all. There might be one parable in there, you can think about that, but we can debate it. But again, it goes back to that question of what is a parable. Most of it, nearly all of it, is just plain teaching, preaching, explaining what the Bible means. There's other times in Matthew when he just, so for example, chapter 10, just one chapter, he teaches the disciples, and again, it's just teaching. He's not speaking in parables at that point. And then chapter 13, verse 1, all of a sudden, something changes. So it says he goes out of the house, and he sits by the sea, and the crowd comes in verse 2, and he gets into a boat and he sits there, and the multitude, the crowd, are all there by the shore. And verse 3, it says he spoke many things to them in parables. In fact, it goes further than that. If you go over to verse 34, still in the same chapter, it says all these things Jesus spoke to the multitude in parables, and without a parable he did not speak to them. All of a sudden in chapter 13, when he's speaking publicly to this crowd, he won't say a word unless it is in a parable. See, this has been a huge and sudden change for Jesus. Why the big change? I think that's important if we're going to understand parables. Why does that change? Well, to understand that, you have to look back at chapter 12. And in chapter 12, I think you see two key things happening in chapter 12. I know we didn't read the whole of it, but if you've got a Bible with headings, that will be enough to give you a flavour of what's happening in chapter 12. So for example, the first heading, at least in my Bible, beginning of chapter 12, controversy over Sabbath labour. He's got this confrontation with the Pharisees. Jesus is freeing up the disciples from the man-made rules of the Pharisees over the Sabbath day. Chapters 9, verses 9 to 13, you've got another controversy with the Pharisees where he heals someone on the Sabbath day. And you see the reaction, verses 14, 15. The Pharisees went out and plotted against him how they might destroy him. You carry on. Go forward to verse 22 to 30. Again, you've got there the Pharisees accusing Jesus. The only reason he can heal anyone, this Jesus, is because he's got the power of Satan in him. That's what they're saying. And Jesus responds to that in verse 30. He says, look, he who's not with me is against me, and he who does not gather with me scatters abroad. Verses 31 to 37, the head, at least in my Bible, is Pharisees commit the unpardonable sin. But what you've got there is Jesus saying what the Pharisees are really like. He says, they're a brood of vipers. They're going to be judged for the things they say and do. And we did read verse 38 onwards, where the Pharisees ask for a sign. And Jesus says, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to give you a sign. Actually, you have everything you need. Even the people of Nineveh repented at Jonah's teaching. And now someone so much greater than Jonah is here. That, I think, is the first trigger, is that you've got Pharisees who have made up their mind about Jesus and are plotting to kill him. Nothing is going to change their minds at this point. They know what they think of him. And then the second trigger, at the end of the chapter, verses 46 to 50, the second incident, is that his mother and brothers come. And they want to speak to him, but Jesus makes a point. He says, but actually, he points at his disciples and says, here's my real family. Here's my mother and my brothers and my sisters. He's saying, look, the people who accept my teaching, they're my family. Can you see what's happening in Israel at this moment in history? The whole country is being divided. Now, people talk a lot at the moment about our country being divided over Brexit. You hear people saying, how are we going to ever heal again? How will we become a united country again? Now, whatever you think about that, I hope what you can see is that Brexit and any divisions we have in our country today are nothing compared to the division that was there when Jesus arrived on the scene in Israel. But with Jesus, he literally has one group of people who hate him and want him dead, and you have another group of people, his disciples, who worship him, who listen to his words and obey his teaching. That Jesus is revealing a divide that is there in Israel. And it's a divide that goes bigger than any other sort of social divide, any kind of class conflict, any racial divide, any left versus right political disagreements. That is the big divide in every society since Jesus came to this world. It's a divide that exists here in Nelson. That there are two groups of people, and there is an enormous chasm between them. It's a divide that exists in every building, in every room. It's a chasm that often splits families in two. And it's based on that one thing: are you a disciple of Jesus Christ? Now, there are some people, I'm talking about Brexit again, there are some people who just don't care about Brexit. Maybe you find that hard to believe. You switch on the news and you think, doesn't everyone care? But some people just don't have strong feelings either way. I don't know if you, maybe you ended up watching a rugby match yesterday. Maybe you're in the house and you don't care about rugby at all, or at least you had no interest in the particular match that was on. You were just a neutral. I don't care, but you just ended up watching it anyway. There are some things we just don't really care about, are there? But, you know, when it comes to this divide, actually Jesus says you can't be neutral. Remember what he said early on in chapter 12, either you're for him or you're against him. And yet so many people try to be neutral with Jesus. You know, there are lots of people in our world who, like, well, a nice bit of Christianity, that'll be fine for me. At Christmas time, maybe just a Sunday morning every night. And it's just one of their many hobbies and interests. And Jesus says that if you've not given your life to me, you're not mine. And if you're not for me, then you're against me. Well, it's these events, the Pharisees turning against him, the people becoming his enemies, even his family want him to calm down a bit. They think he's deluded at this point. All these things make him start to speak in parables when he never has before. Now, I want you to notice again the reaction that the disciples give him to that. So Jesus starts and he tells his first parable, the parable of the sower, which is verses 3 to 9. And the disciples come to him in verse 10 and they ask him, why do you speak to them in parables? Now, the fact that they're asking that question means they're confused. You don't go up to someone, you don't go up to a teacher and say, "Hey teacher, why are you doing this brilliantly clear teaching method that everyone get? Why are you teaching so well?" Actually, they're confused. I think if you were to rephrase it, I think you could almost say, "Why are you using a teaching method that's difficult to understand?" You can tell they don't understand it, because in verse 36, I know we didn't read that far, the parable of the tares, verse 36, his disciples came to him saying, "Explain to us the parable of the tares of the field." They can't work out what this parable means. This is not straightforward stuff, even for the disciples. I don't know if you find that surprising. If you've been brought up going to Sunday school, or if you've been to church plenty of times before, if you're relatively familiar with your Bible, you're thinking, aren't the parables fairly straightforward, really? Isn't it sort of obvious what a lot of them mean? They're only obvious when someone's explained them to you. And for the disciples hearing them for the first time, no one had explained them. They hear these stories and they just don't know what at least some of them mean. I guess it's a bit like if I was to tell you a riddle. I mean, I showed you the code, and okay, some people got the code eventually. If I were to tell you a riddle, what has a head and a tail and no legs? Now, if you've heard that before, you probably think to yourself, that's easy. It might be one of two. I've heard that before, I know it straight away. If you haven't, there's a pretty good chance you won't work it out. I wouldn't have been able to work it out unless the answer was given to me. See, we only think parables are easy because we've heard the answers before. Well, Jesus gives his answer in verse 11. Here's what he says, verse 11. He says, the reason he speaks in parables is because it has been given to you to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it has not been given. Again, see what Jesus is saying. There are two types of people, and the differences between those two are enormous, and that's why he speaks in parables. He's speaking so that one group of people can hear and understand, and the other won't. Let's look at them both. Firstly, he's saying there are people who understand mysteries. We're talking there about mysteries in the, you know, whodunit murder mystery type mysteries, where you've got a detective trying to solve a crime. Not talking about that sort of mystery. Not talking about things we can't explain. We often say, it's a mystery. I found myself saying it the other day when one of our frisbees was out the front of our house. And I asked all the children, how on earth did that frisbee get to the front of the house? I don't believe you could have thrown it over the top. What? And all the children denied any knowledge of it. So you end up saying, it's a mystery. Never going to know how that frisbee got there. It doesn't really matter. It's not a big deal. But we often say, it's a mystery. Who knows? That's not the type of mystery I'm talking about here either. When the New Testament uses the word mystery, it's talking about things we can't know unless God reveals those things to us. That's why Jesus says it has been given to you, to his disciples, to know these mysteries. He says there are some people in this world who, because of God's grace, see things as they really are. They know who they are. They know who made them. They know what they're supposed to be doing with their lives. And they know where they will go after they die. There may be times when they veer off track. There may be times when they forget things. There may be times when they're afraid or they even doubt those things, but they know those things to be true. Why? Because Jesus has revealed these mysteries to them. He's talking about his disciples, all of his disciples. Verse 12, he describes them again. He says, for whoever has, to him more will be given, and he will have an abundance. You know, if you're a Christian, that is going to be the story of your life. And that's something that should excite us. That you're somebody who has, that's how he describes you, You're somebody who has. See, Jesus divides society up into the haves and the have-nots, but not in the way we think of it, not in terms of physical possessions. He says, actually, this isn't anything to do with your wealth. It's not because you're clever and you've figured this stuff out. Actually, Jesus has loved you and chosen you and opened your eyes so you can see things as they really are. And now you have that, your life is going to be one of gaining more and more insight, understanding more and more mysteries. And there's going to be a day when you fall asleep in this world and open your eyes in the next. And the number of things you know then, the number of mysteries that are revealed to you will just explode. Later on in verse 35, Jesus picks up on this same idea again, talking about secrets. So he's quoting Psalm 78, verse 2. It says, Jesus spoke in parables, saying, quoting the prophet Isaiah, I will open my mouth in parables. I will utter things kept secret from the foundation of the world. The parables are where Jesus reveals secrets. Things that have stayed secret right from the beginning of time. And now Jesus is telling us, telling his disciples, those things. And if you're a Christian, you can understand, you can hear, you can gain from those things. Over the coming weeks, the plan is to unravel those secrets of the kingdom. Then Jesus secondly speaks as well about those who don't understand the mysteries. You said about that sharp divide between people like the Pharisees and his own disciples. He says in verse 11, there are these other people and it's not been given to them to understand these mysteries. That's the thing about parables. They're going to hear exactly the same words, word for word. They're going to see everything exactly the same, but their eyes are going to stay shut. These parables will either confuse them or enrage them, or they'll just ignore them completely. Jesus says that's one of the reasons he speaks them in parables. Verse 13, therefore I speak to them in parables. That's why. It's because people who are opposed to him, they've made up their minds and they're not going to get it because they don't want to get it. He says it's because seeing they do not see, hearing they do not hear, nor do they understand. He says in verses 14, 15, he's quoting Isaiah. He says, look, this is something Isaiah in the Old Testament prophesied about, that there will be people like this. And why, whose fault is it? It's not their fault. Verse 15, it's not God's fault, it's their fault. Their hearts have grown dull, their eyes are hard of hearing, and they have closed their eyes. That's what he's saying. Now, there are some things in life that are just hard to understand. Ever watched a film with a really complicated plot, usually involving time travel or something, and you're watching it and you constantly want to nudge the person next to you and say, where are they now? Are they in the future? Are they back in the... What's going on? And who's that? And you just think, I just don't get what's going on here. Ever sat in a lesson? Ever sat in a lesson and thought, I have no idea what the teacher is saying here. I just don't get it. And she's explained it again and again, and I just can't stretch my mind around what on earth she's talking about. Now, sometimes that might be because the film is weirdly complicated, and they have tried to be really clever, but they've been so clever no one can actually follow it. And sometimes that might be because the teacher hasn't actually explained things very well. I know those things are possible. But here, Jesus says the issue with parables is never any of those things. His parables are never beyond our comprehension. He says if we want to understand them, we will. And if we don't want to understand them, we won't. This isn't a matter of intellect. The Pharisees were intelligent, well-read people. actually Jesus says the key thing here is our hearts. He says the reason people choose not to understand is their hearts are dead to spiritual things. They don't want to grasp what Jesus is saying. Now maybe you come to church this morning and you're reading this parable and you're hearing these things about being a disciple of Jesus Christ. You're thinking, I don't know if I understand yet. I'm not sure if I get it. If someone asked me, what is a Christian or anything like that, I don't know how I would answer. I don't really get what the answer is yet. Maybe you've been coming to church and you're like, there are big questions that I want answered to, the questions of life and death. And you want answers. What should we do when we're not sure if we understand, but we want to understand? Well, you do what the disciples did in verse 36. When they hear a parable they don't understand, they go to him. They go to Jesus. Jesus, explain it to us. They go and ask the question. That's why the key to these studies is that we need to be asking Jesus week by week, Jesus, give us understanding. Give us insight into your word. Because, you know, we can be too quick to presume, as long as I'm switched on, as long as my brain's working, as long as I'm smart enough, I'll figure this stuff out. Actually, Jesus says again and again, if we want to understand his words, it's him who will give us understanding. He will open our eyes. So Jesus is teaching in these parables, that these parables are there to expose that divide that's there in Israel. That quite simply, you've got some people who want to know, and you've got some people who don't. Same as that riddle I told you earlier. You know, I told you that riddle, and I hope at least for a moment or two you were thinking, trying to work it out. I hope it's not been the only thing you've thought about for the last few minutes, just sitting there grinding your teeth and like, oh, I'm going to get this. But I hope, I hope you were a little bit annoyed that I didn't tell you the answer. Because actually you do sort of want to know, because it's a bit annoying now that you don't know the answer to this riddle. Well, I didn't tell you the answer for that very reason, because that is to show you that that's the purpose of riddles. They're there to provoke our curiosity, to get us thinking, to make us want to know the answer and go and ask the person, go on, tell me the answer then. So I suspect if I didn't tell you the answer, there'd be one or two of you who probably would come up to me after and say, well, what's the answer to the riddle then? What does have a head and a tail and no legs? So go on, I'll tell you the answer then. So you're not thinking about it for the rest of the service. It's a coin, a penny. It has a head, a tail and no legs. That's why Jesus tells parables. To provoke our curiosity. To get us thinking. Because it draws out of us whether we really want to know the answer. Whether we really want to know him or not. Listen to what Jesus says in verse 12, though. Very serious warning. Verse 12, whoever does not have, even what he has will be taken away from him. You can see what choosing to reject Jesus means. It's choosing an eternity without all the good things that God gives us in this world. Your intellect, your health, your friends, your family, your hobbies, your favourite sports, your favourite TV programmes. It's choosing an eternity without those things. An eternity of punishment. Don't let this world, and don't let this your own sinful mind persuade you that you don't need Jesus and you can go it alone without him. But on the flip side, look what Jesus says to his disciples in verse 16. Verse 16 said, blessed are your eyes, for they see, and your ears, for they hear. He's talking now about the disciples again, and he says, look, there is a special blessing reserved for these disciples because they're hearing secrets that have never been unveiled before. He says in verse 17, there were prophets and righteous men. They desired to see what you see, and they didn't get to see it. They longed to hear what you hear, and they didn't get to hear it. Do you know, Isaiah would have given his right arm to have been there with those disciples, hearing him tell those parables, coming face to face with Jesus. But actually, how much more so would he have wanted to be here today? You know, Christian, do you realise how blessed we are? That Isaiah would have given not just his right arm, I think he would have given his left arm as well, to have one day here in Bethel Church, Nelson. And that's not because of the preaching, it's not because of any of us as people in particular, it's nothing to do with me as a person or any of us as people. It's simply to be in a place where he hears the words of Jesus, the Son of God, those things that were mysteries, secrets in Isaiah's day. But if he came and sat in this service right now, he would have heard the words of the Son of God. How many of us have Bibles in our houses? Probably most of us. Quite a few of you, I expect, have a Bible on your phone. Yeah, you've got something in your pocket, and wherever you are, wherever you go, you can pull it out, you can press one button, and you can see the words of the Son of God himself. Jesus says, that is an immense privilege, something the Old Testament prophets would have longed for, and we have it. Let me close then by saying this, coming back to something I said, touched on earlier. You know, it's impossible to be neutral with Jesus. And you know, that is one of my biggest fears. One of my biggest fears isn't that you hate Jesus and reject him and would love to spit in his face. Clearly that's a terrible thing. But you know, actually my biggest fear for you is that for you churches, well, it's all right. I don't mind coming to church. The people are quite nice, quite like singing. It's nice having a cup of coffee after the evening. So, you know, it's quite nice. And for you, church is just on a par with meeting a friend for a coffee or sitting down and watching a film. Well, it's nice, isn't it? Christianity is nice. My biggest fear is if that's how you see it, that you are sleepwalking your way to a lost eternity. You know, if you're not right with God, it's not meant to be nice. Church isn't meant to be pleasant and nice, because there is a fundamental chasm between you and God. And my biggest fear for you is that you will walk out those doors of this church this morning and you're still not asking the question these parables are designed for us to ask. It's like listening to that riddle and just not wanting to know the answer. Coming to church, hearing Jesus speak about things of eternal life, and walking out the door and thinking, oh, what am I going to have for lunch? Where should we go this afternoon? Please, I ask you, as you walk out this morning, ask yourself the biggest question you can ever ask yourself. Am I right with God? Do I know him? Do I know where I'm going if I die today? And if you can't answer those questions with a yes, don't just leave it there. Do what those disciples did. Ask Jesus to explain these things to you. Ask him to give you eyes to see. Because there are answers. And it is possible for us to walk out those doors and say, yes, praise God, I am right with God because I know Jesus, his son. Well, we're going to close by singing in response to what we've been thinking about. It's number 538. Come sinners to the gospel feast. And the final verse says, this is the time. No more delay. This is the Lord's accepted day. Come in this moment at his call and live for him who died for all. We'll stand and sing 538.